Welcome to the Florida Grown Femme Podcast,
where best friends Janet and Sage cover everything from sex to Starbucks.
Grab a coffee and join.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Florida Grown Femmes. I'm Janet.
And I'm Sage.
And this week, before we jump into anything too crazy, this episode, little trigger warning, we are going to be talking about some serious topics today. We're going to be talking about mental health disorders. We're going to be talking about depression. We're going to be talking about medications. And so we just wanted to start off the episode with that. So people know that what we're jumping into. And also, if anyone or if you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts or a crisis, please reach out immediately to the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988, or you can text HOME, H-O-M-E, to the crisis text line at 741-741. These services are free and confidential. Okay, so serious part, just like put that there. We got started there. Serious part aside, Sage, Why don't you tell our audience what our question of the day is?
Yes. Today's question is, what happens when the joy of the Lord isn't enough?
Ooh, what happens when the joy of the Lord isn't enough? So if you are just joining us and not really sure what that even means, if you're new to faith, or maybe you are been in the faith for a while, we're just going to like unpack that a little bit. So typically what that means is that the joy of the Lord, we hear this at church, like you go to church, you get saved, you're a new person and you're happy forever. You know, that's kind of how it feels like when you first get saved, like, or if you grew up in church, like that's kind of sometimes how the church makes it sound, that life is beautiful and wonderful once you know Jesus. And while it's true, you know, like there, I agree with the sentiment that life is better with Jesus. One of the things that Sage and I are both passionate about, and if you all don't know, Sage is in the mental health field. Sage, I guess I was going to intro like your background, but like you can background yourself.
Yeah, I studied psychology and I have a master's in marriage and family counseling. And I think what Janet is touching at here is that we often hear the sentiment in the church that like about the joy of the Lord, but I know personally and others have experienced that sometimes there is a disconnect between how we're feeling and that like true statement.
Right.
And a lot of times that disconnect has a name, depression. And so today we are going to be talking about depression, both our experiences. We're going to be talking about how has the church in the past handled depression? What is depression? And then following up with our just hopes moving forward with the church and all of our listeners, if you're struggling with that. So that's kind of a glance into the episode. If you're interested, keep listening. Yeah. So let's just dive in. Should we talk about what is depression first, or do you think we should talk about the church's relationship to depression?
Maybe, I was thinking, you know, maybe the church part, because, you know, how, like touching on what you're saying in church. So we get like told that, you know, this life is beautiful and wonderful, but then you also get the messages, okay, like if you're in times of trouble, just lean on Jesus and just pray for that. And like God heals. And like you hear, I was talking, like Sage and I were talking earlier before this episode, and I just did like a little research on like how many healings are actually in the Bible that Jesus said, because, you know, we don't know how many, but it's arguable depending on how you define healings. But Jesus performed from 17 to 37 physical and mental healings on people in the Bible. And so you hear this, you hear these wonderful stories that God heals and all these miracles, people get saved from cancer. You lay hands on people, depending on the type of church you go to. And, you know, after that, they walk away healed. And, you know, I know Sage is kind of touching on it, and it's like, that's great to hear. And miracles happen sometimes on the spot, but you know, what happens when it doesn't happen on the spot? Like Sage said, depression is something that isn't, you know, I think what people need to kind of understand is there's all of us as humans go through highs and lows. And I think we'll all experience a type of depression. But what Sage and I are talking about is like that clinical depression, that depression that just doesn't go away because you're going through, you know, Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a difference, and we're going to talk about that in what is depression, but there's a difference between just having like a sad day and mm-hmm. feeling depression, and it's not the same. Yeah,
absolutely. And so I think sometimes the church does its best to, you know, to provide hope and provide peace. But I think sometimes we need to remember that the church is not a hospital. You know, the church is not
limited.
Is limited. It is a resource, and it is, prayer is one thing that is magical, but in healing, and there has been tons of research that backs that, you know, prayer does have some effect, like some positive effects. But I think the church does a disservice a lot of times, because I mean, maybe people aren't aware of this, but pastors, even though they get, you know, training in the sense of like pastoral counseling, like they learn how to talk to people and communicate with people, but they don't necessarily get like the SAGE background. SAGE has done a deep dive in mental health disorders and can recognize those and know exactly, you know, how to treat it or recommend those treatments. And I think people forget that not every pastor gets that. And I, you know, this is kind of a like segue on another tangent, but everybody should do a little background on their pastor and see how they were educated and stuff. Like, did they go to a real, and I say real, a real university that is accredited, or did they just go to, you know, whatever. So like that type of thing, I go on a tangent, but Sage, you know, I think that's important as to remind people that you have, you know, like compared to the, what pastors, their training is theological. Psychological.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, theological. And, you know, it's not a psychological training. It is not a training in mental health or mental wellness. And I personally don't necessarily think that that's automatically a fault to pastors,
right?
But it is a limitation that we need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times there has been hurt because pastors maybe are trying to explain something, you know, that's happening in the psyche in a theological way.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, I don't want to say grasping at straws, but like trying to connect dots and explain things based on their education, when really they're missing a link. They're missing that psychological background. And, you know, I do believe that there are a lot of well-intentioned pastors out there. Yeah. But you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so, I do think that, so there's two things that I think happen because there is a lack of education and a lack
of those well-intentions. I was like, there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give the examples of what those well-intentions can go wrong?
Yeah. Well, one of the things like you already touched on, which is that, you know, believing that God heals everything or all the time. And, you know, I'm not saying that God doesn't heal, but, it's kind of like this idea, like just pray and it will get better. And that's not enough for everybody. You know, some people do need medication to get better, to heal from depression. And so again, it's a theological idea that Jesus heals, that when we become Christians, we don't, you know, that healing is available to us. That's a theological understanding, but when it's not working for a person, a congregant, stopping there isn't enough.
Right.
And the pastors don't have that background to maybe say, hey, I think you need to talk with a therapist, you know, and alongside with that, and this is the one that I think is a lot more dangerous of a connection, is the idea that illness, mental health disorders in general are caused by sin or always caused by demonic influence.
Yeah. That's a really toxic belief. But what you just said, outside of even like the demonic part, but that sin causes illness. And I think that there's probably a lot more people that if they did a deep dive, like into their soul and what they think, like they think that more than they realize. And I'm glad you said that, Sage.
Well, and I, you know, adding on to that, like, why is that so harmful? Because we are taught in the church that sin is a choice. And so then you're connecting this idea that, well, I'm feeling depression or I'm feeling a mental disorder because I'm making some type of choice in my life, which is
it's
sinful.
My fault.
It's my fault. And that's what people are hearing.
Yeah.
And then if you add on that, some people, not all, but some people do believe that it's a demonic presence. Like that's also could be terrifying for some people.
Traumatic.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm laughing, but like, yeah, traumatic, you know?
Yeah. Cause again, not that we're saying that I'm like, I'm not saying that demons don't exist, but typically in America, demons don't provide like, it's mental health disorders versus demons. And
yeah. And it is chemical. It is, you know, having to do with what's going on inside of the brain and inside of the body. And, you know, when we're, and again, like pastors are taught about sin and about choice and about how they believe sin affects a person, an individual. And like, that is what it is, but it's not the full scope of what could possibly be happening. And I think that we are missing out when pastors don't bring in people who are trained in areas that they're not trained. I feel like we're, you know,
Right. Absolutely. Well, I think the other thing too, is that I think pastors or certain denominations get locked in on and they forget. And I think we said this on the show before, God moves differently. God doesn't prayer is the first step, but if you're praying and praying and praying, God heals differently. Sometimes God's healing is connecting you with the right resources, you know, connecting you with a doctor at your church that recommends going on medication, you know, like healing is getting on medication so that you want to go to church again. You want to be in church again. I think outside, like I was thinking of another example that it's not that, again, because kind of what Sage is saying is like pastors know what they know and some are more educated than others and stuff and more informed than others. But a lot of, at the end of the day, pastor, and it's not a wrong belief to believe that prayer can change things. I do believe that is something that is important, but to what Sage is saying, like, if you're not noticing a change after, you know, if it's not an immediate miracle, if it's not an immediate, like, okay, noticing the next few days or like week or so, you know, look for the other, like one pastor should be making sure that they have their eyes open and being like, okay, this person is, we've prayed, what other resources has God provided?
Come on.
You know, like we live in 2022, we're not Amish. We believe in the like medical, like, you know, the modern
medicine.
We should be using it. We shouldn't be like dismissing it because like we believe in Jesus.
And,
like,
and I would like to give a case to destigmatizing, you know, modern medicine. If you think, just think about depression and somebody who's depressed, how they may go about self-medicating, how they're feeling, you know? And for me, so let's say somebody turns to alcohol. It's just an example. Okay. Someone turns to, they're struggling so much. They want relief. They turn to alcohol. That's not going to help them long-term. Okay. Short-term, it may, their problems may go away, but long-term it's not going to help their depression. On the other hand, antidepressants is also a way of medicating, if you will. It is an actual medication, that is going to help your congregants in the long-term. So I don't like, I really, it upsets me that there is such a stigma against, you know, using modern medicine or modern medication. That is not giving up hope. That is not saying God won't heal me. It is just saying that, hey, maybe this is a great avenue for healing that God is opening up and has created, you know, has helped scientists discover, you know, if you will.
They're Christian scientists. It's not like God like made scientists, like gave them purpose and meaning too. Like they're meant to create miracles for us. Like that's the thing too, is God uses, you know, that, you know, God doesn't just use his same tricks that he used in, you know, 33 BC, you know, he's still, he's using the, what he's got in his pockets. He's like, well, I got some doctors over here. I bless them with some gifts. They can help over here. You know, like he spreads the healing around. And I think there, one thing I also want to say that maybe people have heard in church is that like, you can pray the anxiety away. And that I think is something really toxic, because again, as someone who has dealt, who has PTSD and deals with anxiety and depression, prayer helps, but it doesn't help everything. Like, you can't just pray away my anxiety. Like, I have, you know, Sage knows this, but a couple friends know this, but church for the last 6 months for me has been a trigger. Like, if I go to a physical church, I am choking down a panic attack in, like, either there or in service, and it's not comfortable. And so, you know, there's, it's a lot easier for me to, this lot past 6 months, to watch online church. And people are dismissive, you know, sometimes, like, pastors don't even know what they're saying when they're like, oh, to the online church, or like, to the real people in the audience. Like, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, those little microaggressions are hurtful, but at least, like, I'm in church, bitch. Like, you know, like at least, like, you know, don't, for those who are also struggling with maybe some of the things, like I did, we're going to church just doesn't sound great, but I want to connect with Jesus. Like, online church is there for a reason, you know, and it does help. And there are resources. And one thing that has been really helpful for me, and it's, again, it's a rarity that this is available at the church I'm at, but, like, I specifically sought out a church that had a pastor that understood mental health, like, really understood. And I got lucky, you know, I went to Southeastern University, so I had these connections available to me. But I think most people know I go to Grace City, and I go to Tampa, but I also, the Lakeland, the senior pastors, Christina Gard and her husband, Andrew Gard. Christina is on her, working through her doctorate right now in psychology. Like, she is a expert, and she is one of the main reasons that I was able to connect to my faith again these past few years as I was dealing with PTSD, was because I wasn't hearing bullshit in my sermons like that. You know, like, her husband, thankfully, has, like, he's talked about how, like, being married to a psychologist, you know, he's therapized a lot too. And so he's watched his language on what he says, and even about online stuff and things like that, like, because he knows how triggering it is. And I've even talked to Christina and been like, hey, I've been triggered by things that have been said. Like, do you think this is something that I'm overreacting with? Or do you think this is something that you can coach your pastor with? And those are real, like, good conversations. And I'm lucky that I'm able to have that, but not every church responds that way. And I say that because, you know, I want our audience to walk away with hope and knowing that, you know, it's okay to ask for extra help. But I also want you to know that, as Sage and I have said, it's okay. You might experience some pushback, because, and it's just because some people aren't as educated or as informed. Or again, you can remind your pastor that, you know, prayer is healing, but also so is medication. You know, there are lots of opportunities, and even, like, you know, so just be aware of those things in church. You know, be aware of what is going to provide safety and healing for you. You know, God meets you where you're at. He doesn't just meet you in the church building.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I love that reminder that also to take care of yourself and do what you need in the right season. If that's at home church, like, do it, you know? And also for pastors out there to remember, like, hey, there are people in your congregation suffering with all sorts of things, depression, anxiety, PTSD. I mean, the list goes on, you know, and to be aware. And just because they're not shouting it from the rooftops or they're not saying it out loud to you, doesn't mean that, you know, some of your words can be triggering. So if there's any pastors or church leaders listening, if there still are any left, we would like to say that. But okay, let's talk a little bit about just, like, what depression is in general, in case some of our listeners are like, like,
maybe it's me,
maybe I'm struggling with that, or maybe somebody I know is struggling with that. So I did just pull up a Webster dictionary definition that says depression is a mental condition characterized by feelings of severe despondency and dejection, typically also with feelings of inadequacy and guilt, often accompanied by a lack of energy and disturbance of appetite and sleep. I do just want to say that, as somebody who has studied psychology, who has studied depression, depression to me is still something I have such a hard time putting my finger on, because so many people experience it so differently. And so, you know, for some people it is, you know, seasonal. For some people it's chronic. for some people, you know, they're going out in their day-to-day putting a happy face on, and you would never know that they're struggling with depression. For other people, they just drop off the map. You don't hear from them.
Yeah.
And so
some people carry it. You can see it, you know, I think that too, like you can see people carrying it and the weight of the world on them.
And it is just like, it really does present itself to different people in different ways. Yeah. And I would say, like, if you're like, oh, I'm not even sure if that's what I'm dealing with, here are some things that I would think of, you know. How is your, you know, ability to function day-to-day tasks? I'm talking day-to-day. Mm-hmm. Like, are you able to unload the dishwasher? Mm-hmm. Are you able to make yourself a meal? Are you able to fall asleep at night, sleep through the night? You know, are you able to respond to messages
without the feeling of overwhelm and anxiety? Like, yes. I think that's like with it. It's like, cause you can do like, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm fine. I get it done. Mm-hmm. But is it
right?
Hard to do. I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, and for some people, it really is a question. Like, are you even capable of doing it? Mm-hmm. No matter how you're feeling, what kind of feelings are there? Cause for some people it is anxiety. For some people it's overwhelm. For some people, you know, it's just
hard.
Like I said, it is very, it's such a spectrum, isn't even the right word, I think, but there's just so many different experiences of depression. The reason why we mentioned the suicide hotline at the beginning of this episode is because untreated depression and it can be life-threatening. So this is a serious topic. There is medication, as we have already said, we've already talked about medication that is possible for people who have depression. Unfortunately, not all cases are receptive to medication, unfortunately.
Yeah. I read that it's about 60% of people who take antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications notice like a feeling, like notice the medication, like it taking effect after a couple months. And so, and also again, like Sage and I are not your doctors. So like, you know, always talk to your own doctor and your own mental health professional and stuff, but about medication and all that. But yes, that I want, like what Sage was saying is like, I thought that was really interesting and I think it should give hope. I think people are like 60% that like are noticing a difference with medication. And I don't know, that gives me a lot of hope that it's like, you know, and there's other resources too. It's like, there's not just medication, but it's like, that should provide a lot of hope.
Yes. Also, I was looking up some statistics and it said like 300 million people are dealing with depression and it is the leading cause of mental health disturbance. So if you're wondering like, do I know somebody suffering with depression? The answer is yes.
Yeah. Sage, what would you say to the people who are like, you know what? I don't need medication. I'm going to I got it. Like, I'm going to talk to a counselor. Like, I don't need it. Like I'll talk it out. Like I don't need it.
I mean, the first thing I would say is like, it's your life. I'm not going to tell you what to do. The second thing I would say is, are you noticing a difference with your counseling, with your talk therapy?
Yeah.
If you're noticing, oh wait, you know, hey, I'm feeling a lot better than I was six months ago. Great. If you're not noticing a difference, a significant difference, if you're still struggling with the things that we talked about, the day-to-day, you know, then I would ask your therapist about medications. And if your therapist is not capable, if you're going to like a counselor at your church who's not educated in that, then go to your primary care physician and tell them, hey, I've been going to talk therapy for this long and I haven't seen any difference. I'd like to try some medications. That's and great. I just, again, want to destigmatize that and say that, you know, there's nothing wrong with medication. If you had broken your leg and just decided, you know, screw it, I'm just going to heal.
Imagine.
I'm going to keep living my life. I'm not going to take any breaks. I'm going to keep living my life. My leg's just going to magically heal. You know, that sounds ridiculous now, doesn't it? Yeah. Pray about it. That sounds ridiculous, you know, but we do that with mental health all the time.
Yeah. And I do want to be careful about one thing is that Sage and I are not advocating going on medication before talking to somebody. You should always talk before like going to your general doctor and be like, I want to go on medication. Because I think that was something for me just to get personal and stuff. Like I mentioned earlier in the episode that these past like 6 months have been really hard for me, you know, for, I think the audience, like I said, I have PTSD. I was diagnosed like 3-4 years ago, immediately got into therapy, took a break for about like a year. Cause I was, you know, quote, quote healed. And then this past like year has been motherfucking hard. And I started a new therapist in January, and this new therapist is great. I do EMDR therapy. And like, mm-hmm. I've told Sage, like, I feel like this round, I'm like, I'm in fucking therapy. Like, my God, like, this is hard. Like, this is fucking therapy. Mm-hmm. And so, but despite the fact that I have put in a lot of work, like what Sage was saying, like, I still wasn't noticing quite the difference I wanted. And I was kind of at a point where I'm like, all right, it is what it is. I went from having 8 color crayon box to 64 color crayon box. I got to figure out how to work all these crayons at the same time. And like, that was like how it was going to work. I was like, this is what it is. Like, I'm in talk therapy, like eventually, maybe like years down the line, I'll feel in control again.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, you know, I found out that a friend was also on medication and that I noticed they were making like big strides after a month or 6 weeks. And I was like, I want that. So like, I'm like, you know, like I want to feel that way. Yeah. And my therapist had brought it up a couple times, but I had been very like headstrong about like, no, I don't want medication. Like, you know, mind over matter. I'm going to fucking fix this. So like PTSD will be healed by my mind. So like my broken mind will fix itself. I'm going to pray about it. I'm going to church. Like even though I can't get into church, I'm going to do it. Like it's fine. And I have been on medication for a week now, a little over a week. And it has been a game changer. Like most, and I will say asterisk, like it usually takes like 2 months to like notice an effect and like for personally noticing. My doctor said my friends and family would notice before me, but it was day one where I went to church for the first time in 4 months. I drove up to Tampa, sat through service, enjoyed it. There's even something where I was like, there's like a post-row statement. I was like, I could be angry about this and walk out, but you know, I didn't. And like that, and I got home and stuff. And it was the first time in years where I didn't sweat the drive. I didn't sweat church. Like I just was me like in it and just being like in it. I wasn't angry. I wasn't anxious. And it was wild. And when I got home later and hung out with Patrick, it like, you know, like mid evening, he was like, wow. Like, he's like, there's like 3 things I feel like you would have yelled at me already about and you haven't. This is great. And like, you know, so like, I'm lucky that I've started noticing an immediate effect, but I didn't even realize how much my depression was affecting me to the extent until I went to, for most people again, might know, like I was a theater major back in the day. My focus was directing. And I just told my friend Jalex, who is like my theater, my acting, like soulmate. I just told him that like this past week where the reason I stopped going to shows with him, stopped reading plays, stopped like trying to create my own theater was because I hated going into theaters. Like, again, I hated sitting through plays. I hated even movies. Like while I loved the art of what was happening, I couldn't enjoy what was happening. And I thought I had just lost my passion. I thought it was just, this is who I am now, but I was wrong. Like I sat through this past week, my friend Jalex had to direct this stage reading and it was a dead child play. Not very good. Mm-hmm. And like it, but I was inspired. Like I sat through it and I was like, it's amazing. And I wanted to talk to people afterwards and I wanted to go to the bar afterwards. And that was the first time in years I felt like that. And I didn't know. I told my therapist, like for the longest time, I just want to feel like how I felt in college. I felt unstoppable. I felt focused. And now I feel that. And I've been praising God every single day for this fucking miracle, for this gift, because this is healing. Because I like to what Sage said, and timing is everything. I needed to know that I put in, like, I've done everything. That I did what I had to do. I went to talk, I put in the work, and I'm still going to therapy. That doesn't stop. And I needed to know that I tried everything. Mm-hmm. And now I know that, like, yeah, it's just a little chemical imbalance. I've been using a lot of cake metaphors, but like this, like this medication is the icing on the cake. Like you had to build a cake, you know, like I've been building a cake with therapy. I've been working on my personal development. I'm a cake without the icing, not a great cake, but like, once I got that like medication, now we got some icing. I'm a full on motherfucking cake. Like, yeah, funfetti, yum. Bitch. Like, this is great. Like, you know, like cake is cake, but cake is not as good without the icing. Yeah, and so you also can't build a base of cake of icing. You know, a good cake doesn't rely on the icing. Yeah. So it's, you have to, you know, I think it's a both thing. Like, to anybody in the audience, like we said earlier, it's, medication doesn't solve out everything, but it does help a lot. And well, it helps solving the problem.
I just want a couple of comments. Like, thank you, Janet, for sharing. It's not easy. It's not always easy to get on here and share our very personal life. And we share because we know that it could possibly help somebody. So just claps for Janet. Thank you for being always honest and open and ready to share.
Thank you.
That was my first thought. My second thought, you know, medication did not change who Janet was. Mm-hmm. It just sort of lifted the cloud off so she could be who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cause you said like, you want to be how you were in college. You wanted to feel focused and all that. And it was like, depression was just like this little cloud that kept you from being able to like see and be that person, but like, you are that person, you know, and medication just sort of like clicked the links again so that you can be that person. And, you know, as well, I do want to say, I like Janet's cake metaphor. The only thing that I'm thinking about is I know that there are people out there, because I was one of those people who, like, you only have the strength to make one phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And if you only have the strength to make one phone call and you don't know if you should call a therapist or your primary care doctor, you are struggling that much. You can't even work up the energy or the motivation or the courage to have a talk therapy session. Call your general care doctor, get on medication, and then start talk therapy. I know that feels backwards, but for some people, you are so deep down in that hole that you can't even reach out to get the energy to start talk therapy. Maybe you should have started it years ago. Okay. We can't go back and restart, you know, but if you are struggling that deep, and you know, you only have it in you to have one, you know, just, you can only make that one phone call, like get help, whatever that looks like. If you're like, no, Sage, like, I think I can find a therapist. Like, I think I can, you know, start with talk therapy. Good. If you're open to medication, you can tell your therapist that on day one. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously side by side, you know, it's your journey, and do what you are capable of, and do what's going to be the best thing for you. Because we did kind of make a joke about, the broken leg, and there's pretty like some really standard ways of healing a broken leg, but everybody's journey with mental health is very different. True. So I just want you to hear, like, you know, do that. And I do want to share a little bit of my own story. Because I was at that point, and I thank God that Timon helped me to recognize how much I was suffering with depression. Yeah. I was struggling with depression, but I didn't know to label it that, because of the way it was presenting in my story. And I had gone to a doctor and asked for a hormone test because I said, something is wrong with me. Something's not right. And I was explaining this, and the doctor just looked at me and said, you're depressed. And I was like, what? And I just like started crying. And that doctor actually that doctor actually didn't help me. So he sent me to a clinic, and the clinic said that, yeah, you do, like, you have postpartum depression, but your child is too old for us to help you. And I would, that was it. Like, guys, that was my strength to make the one call, and the doctor didn't, you know, didn't really catch me. Yeah. And I have had a conversation with this doctor, and I told him, like, hey, I studied psychology. That was not okay. If a mom comes to you in with a young child and says they're depressed, you better not sleep until they get help, because that's dangerous to the mother and to the child.
Yeah.
Okay. Rant over. And it took me a year and a half later to finally get the courage again with Timon's help, as I was at my lowest. I was at my very rock bottom lowest. I was in bed just crying, and my son was like jumping on me, and Timon realized like it wasn't funny. I was actually crying, and I was having a hard time explaining to him like what I was feeling, but Sage wasn't there, you know. Sage was like in a deep hole, and I was functioning. I was cooking lunch for everybody. I was, you know, whatever, but I was not really there. And so we made an appointment. We went to the doctor. I made time and go with me. If you need to take someone with you, take someone with you.
I have someone, a strong advocator.
Yeah. And he, and I said, honey, I just need you there in case the doctor doesn't understand me. Cause I was terrified because of the experience I had had previously. Right. That,
right.
And this was a different doctor. I went to my primary care physician this time. And, the doctor was like, I will prescribe you whatever you need, talk therapy, you want medication, like, just tell me what, you know, whatever needs to happen, we will make sure you find healing. And, that was so healing for me, just that a doctor saw me and saw my situation. And, you know, I was telling Janet, like, I am just not that person anymore.
Yeah.
And it has been a night and day difference for me, going on medication. And, I am a better mom. I'm a better partner. I'm a better friend. I'm better to myself. Mm. My creativity came back.
Yeah.
I was finally able to like rest, like get some actual sleep, and all these things. And, you know, it's just, it's been the way that my body has received, antidepressants. Like, I lost weight. Like I said, I got my creativity back. Like, I mean, it just was like, it was insane, you know, like everything my body was holding on to and blocking me in different ways. And, so I am now like a huge advocate for it. And I just think like, if you need help, get help.
Yeah. There's no shame in asking for help.
There's no shame in it. There really isn't. Yeah. And I do just want to say one thing, before we, you know, wrap up on this topic. And that is like, needing antidepressants to feel better doesn't mean you don't have enough faith. It doesn't mean you don't have enough of God's joy. It just means your brain needs a little bit of help to feel that joy that you already have.
Yes. Okay. So good, Sage.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you asked the question, like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not getting healing? Why am I not, you know, this or that? And, like you said, as it turns out, God, maybe he helped some scientists create some antidepressants so that we could feel healing. And, we just had to be willing to take it.
Yeah. Like, honestly, like I can also even say like, God was like 3 months ago. He was like, I said 3 months in, the therapist was like, you want medication? And you were like, no, he was like, I tried, you know, like, damn, you know, again, like everybody's journey is different. And one thing I've learned through therapy too, is like, don't beat yourself up. Like, it's okay that it took you this long. There's a reason for it. And again, like, you know, I kind of subscribe to the belief ish that like, you know, everything happens for a reason, but you know, timing does play an important part in this. And so don't beat yourself up if this is something that you're like, okay, maybe Janet and Sage are right. Maybe I should talk to someone. Maybe I should get a second opinion. You know, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself, especially ladies. Like, you know, it's one, you know, I think it's easy for women, especially mothers, to be like, well, you know, I'm functioning. I have other things to like worrying on. Yeah. I need to focus on other people before I focus on myself. And I can say that as I've coached women in their own like wellness health journeys, that like when you take care of yourself, everything else like falls into place.
Yes.
Because it's one of the, you know, it's like in the, like when you're flying and they say like, put the mask on first and then you help. Yes. Like that is for a reason. Yeah. Like you need, yeah. you can't help someone else from drowning if you're drowning yourself, you know, yeah, you gotta be so able true. To advocate for yourself. Jesus loves you just the same for you taking the steps to get yourself healing. You know, God, again, like, and like heals in many different ways. You know, sometimes it's through medication. Sometimes it's just through prayer. Sometimes it's just like talking to your best friend, but be open to what it can be. You know, I think I like, you know, what Sage and I said, like, I really thought I was like, I just need to do this. I just need to do this.
Well,
sometimes no, like be open-minded. So I think that's, you know, I think Sage said it, like, I love what Sage said. Like, it doesn't mean that you don't have the joy of the Lord if you go on medication. It just means you're going to be able to feel it quicker.
Yeah.
You know, like you'll be able to feel it more. And so again, like Sage and I said, if you are dealing with any of these feelings of depression or suicide, please reach out to a service that can help you. Like we mentioned the hotlines earlier, they are available to you. And again, like Sage and I, we love you. Like one, like let's leave with that. Like we love you and we meet you guys where you're at. We've been there. We're sympathetic to what the church has said, to what you are experiencing. Like this episode, we hope has provided a little bit of hope for you and a little bit of peace to know that there is, it's okay to seek help and to seek anything that you need for your journey to find peace.
And if you were like been struggling and you've been waiting for a sign from God, here's your sign. Okay. What if that means talking to a therapist, talking to a friend, just being open or honest, getting on medication, like, dude, here's your sign. Yeah, look further. Here it is.
I love that. Okay. So let's wrap up the episode on like a happier, lighter topic, just to segue. What segment are we doing today, Sage?
Oh, Janet, we're going to talk about what's the 941, girl.
I love this segment. My, you know, it's my fave. So, and you also know, if you've been listening to the show at all, I'm kind of obsessed with reality TV and true crime. And
yes.
Netflix always hits, you know, we always got a little Florida lately. We started with Tiger King and now they're like, you know what? There's some crazies in Florida. We need to invest in this. So the latest Netflix documentary that just like semi-dropped is The Girl in the Picture. And it hits 941, y'all. It's, you know, murder doc. And of course, this guy is a traveling like killer or whatever. And he makes pit stops up in Tampa Bay, St. Pete, Sarasota, and specifically Mons Venus up in Tampa. Oh, if you don't know, Sage, like for those who have never heard of Mons Venus, can you please explain to people what I'm saying? What Mons Venus is?
I can't, dude. I really can't.
Okay, Mons Venus it's not just like a strip club. It's like the strip clubs of strip clubs. Like 70s, 80s, 90s, like Mons Venus was like the shit as far as like strip clubs. Like it's known for having the prettiest girls. Like it's known for having like all the stars would go there. Side note, Tampa is one of the most sex trafficked cities in America. So like, you know, strip clubs don't have as much of the illusion as maybe they did back in the day, but Mons Venus was like the nightclub or the strip club back in the day. And yes, it goes back in the day, 80s, 90s. And they have the house mom from back then, who's still the house mom then. She's fascinating. Like Sage, I was like, you and her, I was like, you guys would be friends. Like,
why? I gotta check the doc, man.
I was like, girl, this would be someone that Sage would be walking up to the door with and making friends with. Like,
I'm gonna see the documentary now. See, I'm gonna.
I know the house mom alone. I like her story alone. I'm like, girl has. She knows things. What's her guess?
She knows things.
She knows things.
For sure.
I'm telling you, next talk about her. But yeah, so what's the 941? Check it out on Netflix. Like,
wait, so is this doc like this guy still alive and out, or is he like done behind bars? What are we talking here?
Technically still on death row in Florida. Yeah, we got
so alive but captured. So no, you don't have to. You can
we don't have to worry in the sense of like, yes, it's like there, this guy is caught and like all this like murder is like the murders and cases solved. It was so interesting because the FBI guy that he was like, he worked for 52 years and he's like, there's only two cases that I've never been able to solve completely. And it's this one. And so like the end of it, again, it has like a good wrap up, y'all. So it is like the mystery solved and all this kind of stuff. So it does, I won't give it all away, but yeah, if you're into the true crime stuff, like it's a good one. It hits Florida. It hits the good true crime element of it. Like, yeah, that's a good one.
My sister is going to be really into that.
Oh my God. It's so good. I'm so into true crime now. So yeah, that's the 941.
Hey, we love you guys. And we're so appreciative of our amazing listeners.
Yes, we absolutely love.
Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode. Feel free to share it with all your friends. And honestly, we would love for you to leave us a review. Just what the podcast means to you, your favorite things about the podcast. And that helps other people just like see us.
Yes. Bing, bing,
bing, bing, so other people can get touched by the Florida Games.
Yes, absolutely. So please, as Sage said, if you love us, subscribe, rate, review, share us, let everybody know that you enjoy Florida Grown Femmes. We will be back, I guess, next week. So until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.